All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Wednesday, July 19th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are back after a, 10-day hiatus that included the All-Star break and then some other scheduling snafus. Just scheduling sort of wonkiness with getting back into the fold after the All-Star break. But we're back. Buddy, you excited to be back talking baseball? You and I have talked just about every day over the last 10 days, but this is the first time everyone is going to be blessed. Everyone's going to be blessed to hear us talk with each other. It'd be like sitting in one of our phone calls.
Yeah, so first of all, you're all welcome. And second of all, yeah, of course. I've never been happier in my life than to be on this podcast right now.
Literally. I don't feel like you're overstating that, which is why I appreciate it.
No.
We have a pretty interesting day of baseball, only because, every day, most days in baseball can be labeled interesting, depending on your level of interest in baseball, I suppose. But today is weird because it's kind of scattered in that there are some early noon games, and then there's some 3 o'clock games, and then there's an evening slate of games. So things are pretty sectioned off. We'll try to break it down sort of in that noon area, like that's an early four game slate on FanDuel, and then there's like a 3 o'clock stuff. Those kind of might bleed into each other because that's what it is on DraftKings, and then we have a 7 o'clock slate. Try to break it down in a way that's tangible, fungible, something that ends with ibble.
I'm with you.
Nibble-able-able. So you can nibble on the information. Early slate of games, we have some interesting kind of things here going here. I'm wondering your thoughts on, we'll start with some pitching. I'm wondering your thoughts on a guy like Dan Straley, where he's got the best matchup on the board, but he's also Dan Straley. He's in the unfortunate part of being Dan Straley. He's been like sort of decent at times this year, sort of kind of been mediocre at times also. Do you think at this point with him facing Philly, it's like the matchup here is just good enough considering, I don't know, some of the other pitchers on the slate are in not so great spots?
Yeah, I actually like Dan Straley quite a bit here. I think the matchup can't be understated, really. The Phillies, bottom two team in the league in terms of WOBA against right-handed pitching, and a top five team in terms of strikeouts. So kind of a dream spot in a lot of ways. And Straley's a guy that, advanced metrics have had a difficult time figuring out, because the reality of the situation is that he's been 0.7 better in terms of ERA as opposed to xFIP. So a 4 ERA and a 4.7 xFIP over the course of his career. And a lot of that comes down to xFIP and the way it tries to figure out how many home runs you should have given up. So Straley is an extreme fly ball pitcher. He generates just 34.4% of ground balls on balls in play. And normally that would lead to more home runs than he gives up. Now, he still gives up plenty of home runs. Like, his 1.3 home runs per nine are not very solid, but xFIP thinks that he should be giving up more home runs. But what Straley does pack is a lot of upside based on the fact that he just has a low BABIP allowed. And that's because, again, those fly balls, many of them don't turn into hits. They just land in gloves. Some of them land over the fence or bounce off the fence for doubles or whatever. But he can run hot on you, too. And so I think Straley, the 4.5 xFIP isn't spectacular, but I think he's actually something like a true talent 3.8 ERA guy, and that's just plenty on this price and on a short slate where there's not a lot of other better pitching options.
The ballpark suits his profile perfectly.
Oh, yeah,
it's tough to get balls out. I mean, like I said, the Phillies lineup just basically stinks. They just really don't have.
They've been terrible.
They don't have anybody. I mean, they have guys that were like kind of supposed to be somebody's, but you can't really tell if they were supposed to be somebody because they're on the Phillies and the Phillies have no one else, kind of thing. Like, guys like Mikel Franco and Herrera, guys like that. I mean, Nick Williams is sort of a prospect, but not one that you're really worried about. No, I think you're right on the BABIP issues. Well, excuse me, it's not an issue. The BABIP, what looks to be BABIP, kind of run hot is not really, it's probably just not that he's getting lucky with BABIP. It's just that, right, those fly balls turn into outs a lot easier than, say, your average ground ball pitcher has balls sneak through the infield or whatnot. No,
I got 560 innings at the 250 BABIP. Like, it's not, maybe the true talent is somewhere a little north of there, but I don't know. It looks fairly sustainable to me.
If he was a ground ball pitcher with that kind of BABIP, then I would think he was getting crazy lucky over 500 innings. The fact that he is a fly ball pitcher with it makes me feel like that it is actually probably the real thing, and there's not like a lot of BABIP regression coming at his end.
His previous successes, like, he was most successful when he was pitching in Oakland, which also has a nice spacious park that rewards fly ball pitchers as well. So it makes sense to me that he struggled on the Astros, struggled on the Reds, and he's kind of found a home here in Miami.
No, and he's also, I think, the biggest money line pitcher going on the day. He's a -180 to start. Excuse me, on the early slate, he's a -180. Which, just doing a quick scroll down, no one else, no other pitcher on the slate. Carlos Carrasco. We can get to him in a second. He's on the 3 o'clock. This is where it's weird because just like FanDuel has some of these guys on the early and DraftKings doesn't, or excuse me, other way around. DraftKings has all the guys on the early and FanDuel has half of them. So kind of filtering between who we should talk about here on the early is a little weird, but no, the minus 180 is a great money line spot. I do think you see him as pretty much the chalk on the early 12 o'clock FanDuel slate. He's a little pricey on DraftKings, though I think you still get there. After him, let's include the 3 o'clock games for the rest of the discussion just because I think it's just going to be easier. But other pitchers to consider here, we have Carrasco, we have Paxton against the Astros. Any of these guys interest you at all?
Paxton interests me on DraftKings a bit. The $7,400 price tag is extremely cheap for a player with his profile. You know, Paxton this year packing 10 Ks per nine, three walks per nine, perhaps not ideal. But yeah, the xFIP is very solid, 3.4. The RA is running a little bit better than that. Like Straley, he runs a little bit better than his xFIP over the course of his career, albeit over a smaller sample size. Yeah, I think he's just a fairly high floor pitcher. You know, the big time Ks mean that even if he gives up a few runs, he can typically turn it around and still provide some value. And the low walk rate over the course of his career, even if it's spiked this year, means that he doesn't typically run up big innings. So I'm a big believer in Paxton. Obviously, it's about as bad a possible matchup as you can imagine. But on a small slate, especially on DraftKings again, where you're going to have to find two pitchers to stick in your lineups, I think he's a very reasonable option.
Yeah, he's one of those tough ones where you're like, how much does the pitcher pedigree outweigh the fact that his like you said, the matchup is as bad as you can get against the Astros here. He's an underdog to start. You don't like that. You know, Astros 4.4 implied runs for them is pretty low. So, you know, you're getting the idea that he's going to keep the Astros for themselves at a lower run rate, but it's 4.4 implied runs around that is still a pretty high number to roster for a cash game pitcher. I think I'm with you on the price. I just am a little. It's really just one of those things. Like, where does the K upside and the price outweigh the fact that he has to play the Astros in Houston? And you think it's just cheap enough?
I think so. I mean, 7,400 is just about a couple thousand below where we would normally pay for him. Again, on a short slate, that makes a big difference because you can spread it around a little bit and really make up the difference of having to play someone who has to hit seventh or something with someone who bats first or second. So, yeah, I think it's okay. I mean, the Astros also this season, for what it's worth, 15 WOBA points worse against left-handed pitching, rather, and they're still amazing. They're second best in the majors. But, yeah, it's slightly worse for them. And I think, again, if you're just, I'd love to hear some of the other options that you'd throw out there, because that's really what it comes down to, right? Not just Paxton in a vacuum, but who else would you have him considered up against?
Well, real quick, we can talk about some of those guys in a second. One other thing that does help him, I mean, this is baked into some of these implied run totals, but the Astros are without Carlos Correa too. So they do lose, I mean, arguably their second or third best hitter in the lineup. I mean, I would put like Altuve, Springer, and then Correa. It's close. But anyway, he's just
particularly against left-handed pitching.
Right, an elite hitter in the middle of the lineup. They lose him and basically replace him with, you know, I don't know, they throw Gattis in there, I suppose, and then it just kind of just trickles down the line. But losing Correa, you're not going to replace him with anyone really close to his skill level in the middle of the lineup. So that is a big, that does hurt the Astros here, and you're right, against the lefty especially. I actually don't really have a ton of other guys to give here. I'm more just kind of prolonging the talk on Paxton because I just don't really see, I mean, other guys the system like sort of likes, but it's mostly because they're cheap. And for on DraftKings too, the reason it's going some of these cheap guys is because it just wants you to pound in some of these Coors bats. Outside of just having a crazy total elite arm going here, and there really isn't. I mean, Carrasco's probably...
Well, you're not going to pay $13,400 for Carrasco.
No
right?
way. I mean, no, I don't think you can do that. I think that's that's feeling like kind of crazy town to pay that much. And I get sort of why they priced him that high, just because he's like the only guy worth his salt, and it does seem like they do.
That's a great park. You know.
They do go overboard at times with pricing if they see like one guy that stands out above the rest in terms. Even if that guy isn't like a true, I mean, that's like what Kershaw was last night. Like Carrasco's not Kershaw. They shouldn't be priced the same. I do suspect some of that has to do with how just like the rest of the field kind of lines up and just kind of overpriced in that way. I don't know. I don't think you can pay $13,400 for him at all. I think you're going to want to go cheap. You know, systems like kind of looking at guys like Jordan Montgomery and Jose Berrios. My Montgomery, 8.5K per nine. The Twins do strike out a little bit. I wouldn't love doing it. Like it would feel like it had a lot of downside built into it. Sort of the same for Berrios facing the Yankees, just because, I mean, these guys like do have a little bit of K stuff, but this game does look like it's going to have a lot of runs. Could you see rostering either of those two guys? I mean, they are coming very cheap.
Yeah, they kind of remind me of each other, frankly. You know, both have big time K upside. Berrios, I think, possibly a little bit higher, although the matchup is worse on his end. But he's just kind of got that electric stuff coming up through the minors that people projected as a potential double digit K per nine guy. Also extremely young at 23. So you just never know, I guess. But yeah, you wouldn't be super excited about it. You wouldn't roll into cash games feeling like you had it all figured out or anything. But I think it's totally reasonable direction to go. Again, on such a shallow slate.
The other guy that's kind of creeping up there just in terms of raw points on the slate, though he's not a great points per dollar, Sonny Gray, gets to face a Tampa Bay team that will strike out a decent amount. Like they own one of the higher K rates, maybe the highest K rate against right-handed pitchers this season. Sonny Gray's been decent, if not, you know, if unspectacular. Do you think that people end up sort of middling out in that? Because he's a 9,600, so he falls, you know, firmly in between Carrasco, who we agree is overpriced, and then the cheaper guys that we just mentioned a second ago, Berrios, Montgomery, even Paxton. Do you think finding that middle ground on him is kind of worth it in this spot, just considering how much the Rays strike out?
Yeah, it's reminiscent of the Straley play, frankly. I mean, he's a better pitcher than Straley is. Obviously, you're paying a little bit more relatively than you would for him on, or Straley on FanDuel, where we recommended him. But yeah, the Rays just are one of the most striking out teams in the majors. Is that a real term? Most striking out? Striking out is?
Well, it sure
most...
didn't sound good, so hopefully it's a real term. Because if it's not a real term,
then
it's
extra bad. One of the
teams
that strikes out the most, Doug, is what I'm trying to say. And yeah, again, the Rays, worse than the league against left-handed pitchers, but still top 5K rate against righties as well. I think it's a very solid play. I don't really have a whole lot else to say about it. The Rays they're not exactly pushovers, I guess. They do have the 336 WOBA, so you're not, that's not good. That's a top 5 total. So you're not going to walk in there and expect a super high floor from him. So maybe it's not analogous to Straley in that way, but yeah, I think it's, again, when you're going to have to kiss somebody's sister on DraftKings there, and it might as well be Sonny.
Would you rather play Gray at 96 or Straley at 92?
Oh, man, I think I'd rather play Straley, honestly. I think the matchup, especially if we're just talking strictly cash games, I think the matchup goes enough of a long way there to make me feel like he's less likely to get blown up. Although I will say, for upside purposes, that the Rays are very, very intriguing. They're a team that you can just not show up altogether one day and just randomly give a guy like Gray 10 Ks. So I think for upside purposes, Gray. For cash games, I'm going straight.
I think that makes sense. The other guy actually facing them is Feria. Feria is we have around the same projection as Gray. He's in a worse spot. He's an underdog where Gray, you know, is a slight favorite, minus 115 right now. Gray or Feria is by plus 109. A few more runs on the A side, though the A's don't really have much in the way of bats. Feria does have some of that K stuff. I don't know if he interests you at all. That would be, it kind of feels just more speculative, maybe some GBP upside, and that's about it on him.
Yeah, it sounds right to me. I mean, the A's also are a huge strikeout team, so I think all the same things you could say about Gray, you could say about Feria, minus the fact that Feria just doesn't have quite the same track record. He's been good this season. A lot of that is front-loaded, and a lot of that is kind of luck-based. Like, he's not a true talent 2 ERA pitcher. But yeah, if you take his minor league track record and the K stuff there and kind of his early season performance, and you kind of squint your eyes a little bit, you could see him being a big tournament.
It does feel like all the pitchers here are just kind of the same, right? Like, it just feels like, and if you figure they're all kind of the same, like, you know, they're all sort of in that like 8.5 K per nine kind of guy, you know, 2.5 walk, XFIP somewhere ranging between like the mid fours to the low fours. They all kind of fall into that area. And I think when that's the case, when you're looking at guys with similar makeups, look, they're not all the same. I mean, some, you know, there's little differences in kind of what they do. But if you figure they're mostly, they're not so different from each other, at that point, I think you do just kind of look at like money lines and take that matchup and just say, all right, well, you got Philly for the least implied runs. So if you're just looking for a way to break the tie among them, kind of like how these guys are all kind of made up, I do think that that is just a fine way to do it. And I do think that is actually what our system is kind of doing with a guy like Straley. On the early slate for FanDuel, you do not get the Rockies game. You get it on DraftKings. I kind of mentioned before that the reason our system, at least, is defaulting to playing some of these cheaper pitchers and definitely avoiding Carrasco and actually just kind of even avoiding some of these pitchers in the 9,000 range is that Colorado game where they have way more implied runs. We have them at 6.5 implied runs right now. Do you think that it's worth kind of loading up on the bats there on DraftKings? We're going to have to go a different direction, at least on the 12 o'clock for FanDuel, but we'll start with DraftKings. Do you think the play is to just go kind of two of these cheap pitchers, hope to just get out alive and then load up on Colorado? Or is the variance in the bats, is it too risky to just kind of load up on that one game?
I think it's the perfect day to load up on a big game like that because the payoffs at the high pitching tier just aren't good enough, right? Like, it's not like we have a Kershaw going, a Strasburg, someone like, or a Scherzer, someone like that. We just have Carlos Carrasco and not so great a matchup. So given that we don't really want to play him anyway, it's very, very nice that we have a nice salary sink in the Coors bet. So yeah, I think it's the exact day to do so. And I think people who try to pay up for the perceived safety of Carrasco will just wind up getting
burned. Yeah, and I don't, people have not been doing that. Like, I think, you know, DFS industry in general is getting just smarter and smarter and smarter as we go. Like, more sites like ours and just other sites are getting smarter in terms of how they give out information. It's rare that you'll see it, like, well, for instance, like last night, like we had Nova in our DraftKings lineups, and I was actually surprised because he was only like 8% start. And that almost never happens for us. And like with DraftKings, like starting to pitcher two, we've been pretty in lockstep with how the rest of the industry perceives things. Last night it didn't happen. Like Blake Snell was a little more chalky. It didn't end up mattering. And Nova like slightly outperformed him, not like in any great fashion. But for the most part, you do not like. I very much doubt that you would see Carrasco as like a chalk play at that price. I think most people have just got kind of figured out. Like, there's almost no projection system that's going to tell you to play him and like just punt bats, like just considering his makeup. So I do think from a just general just knowledge standpoint, DFS industry can't even talk about it, is getting a lot smarter when it comes to decisions based on price, especially on DraftKings, where it's a lot harder to make prices. For FanDuel, on the early, you don't get the Coors game. Is there a team that's jumping out to you here that you might want to stack a little bit more than others, considering you don't get the Rockies?
Yeah, I think there's actually a couple of reasonable options. The first one I'd look at is the Cubs against Ari Dickey. You know, you're not paying top amounts for pitching, so you can actually spend up a little bit on bats there. Dickey this season, I've talked about it ad nauseum, but just not the same pitcher he was when he got traded to Toronto, to say nothing of him continuing to get worse as he's moved on to Atlanta. So yeah, I would love to stack Chicago. And then Vegas really likes the Yankees against Jose Berrios. You know, I mentioned Berrios as a potential big tournament target on DraftKings, but the fact is that he's still pretty raw. He still can make mistakes, especially up in the zone. And the Yankees just have a lot of left-handed bats that can take advantage of that. So I actually think stacking those two teams is probably where we're going to wind up lining for cash games. And then, you know, maybe we sprinkle in some Minnesota guys here and there. But I think those are the two big targets early.
No, I agree. The top of that Cubs order, the Rizzo, Bryant, Zobrist, kind of, they've been fooled around with that all season. So it's not, we're recording this at 9:30 a.m. So we'll get that Cubs lineup probably in the next like half hour. But, you know, they have juggled that lineup around a little bit, though. I still think you probably see Zobrist hit at the top there. I think you can one-off Giancarlo Stanton here against Pavetta. The Marlins are implied for right around 5 runs, which is a sort of in the same range as those two teams that we mentioned. They don't have, outside of Stanton, they don't have like a guy necessarily that I would kind of want to go to over the other two teams that we mentioned there. But I do like Stanton in a one-off, especially if he's hitting second. All right, let's get to the evening slate of games here. But before we do that, hit us up with a sponsor quick.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about FantasyFactor.com. So Fantasy Factor has been with us for a long time now. And the reason we keep them on as a sponsor is because they offer a particular product that meets the needs of a lot of our audience, I would suspect. And that's that they offer smaller contests for lower buy-ins that are just not filled with sharks ready to chew up all your money and spit it out. They offer a lot of contests from the $5 to $25 range, and they're the traditional salary cap format that you enjoy, just minus 75% of the lineups filled up by pros like Doug, who's out to take your money like a monocled capitalist that he is. So fantasyfactor.com, check them out. DFSR is the promo code there, which will get you a $5 entry fee to any contest that you would like. No strings attached. You just go over there and you can use the entry ticket. Check them out. They've been great for us. We've had a lot of positive feedback from our users, and we've converted a lot of people into Fantasy Factor players. So check out fantasyfactor.com, promo code DFSR, and you can get started playing today.
Right on. So I think the question that most people are going to have for this evening is whether to play DeGrom or Greinke. The reason I'm putting them together sort of here is they're around the same price. DeGrom is slightly more expensive on both sites, though that's probably warranted. And I do think that that's the decision that people will kind of struggle with tonight. If you had a pick, we can make the case for sort of both of them. If you were to sort of pick one, do you think you would take the slight savings on Greinke here against Cincinnati, or do you think you'd rather pay up for DeGrom?
I think I'd take Greinke, and I'm not sure it's even as close as it maybe appears at first glance. I mean, Greinke is $1,000 cheaper on FanDuel. He's got effectively, I mean, better peripherals this season. You give up a half a strikeout, but you also get shave off a whole walk there in the meantime. The ground ball rate's basically identical. The home run rate when you adjust for ballpark is very similar as well. Greinke even has a slight edge there in spite of having his home park being in Arizona. So I actually really, really like Greinke here. What's the case for DeGrom in your mind?
I think the case for DeGrom is he strikes out a few more batters. He has a slightly better just implied run total going. So Greinke, unfortunately, is running in, it goes into Cincinnati, which is actually a worse park to pitch in than it is for his home at home in Chase Field in Arizona. So a 4 implied run total for Greinke is actually pretty high, even in his price range. So like he's 10-2 on FanDuel. He's 11-7 on DraftKings. I probably would prefer him just because of the price difference. The price difference alone probably just kind of settles the debate. Though I do think, I like DeGrom's spot better. I like his matchup better, mostly because of the park, if that makes sense.
So you think the park generates the whole difference there? Because the Cardinals and Reds, very interestingly, effectively identical against right-handed pitching this season. I don't know if I've ever seen it this close. I'm just going to give the numbers just for the sake of the odd statistical anomaly here. But the Reds have 8.6% walks, 21.2% Ks, 329 WOBA. The Cardinals have 8.5% walks, 21.4% Ks, and 325 WOBA. So, which is to say, they're completely identical. There's a degree of statistical significance that, you know, would say that they're effectively identical. So, yeah, I guess if the park makes a big difference there, maybe you prefer DeGrom on an absolute points basis, but I still think you like Greinke given that there's any savings involved at all.
Well, I think the park makes a difference, and I think just DeGrom's a better pitcher. I think those two things, like that, those are the two things I think that go into it, right? I think DeGrom is a slightly better arm, and I just think that the park does. I mean, the Citi Field compared to Great American Ballpark is a pretty huge difference in terms of park factor. So, without looking at it like right away, but I do know that I think like we've said this before, but I'm pretty sure Great American plays as the second best power park in the majors, and I do, and yeah, just having. I know he has a slightly better money line at -157 right now. DeGrom's at -143. Actually, has been bet down a little bit. He was at 158. They were kind of tied in terms there. So like Greinke's moving in the right direction in terms of money line. DeGrom moving in the wrong direction. Yeah, no, I do think the ballpark probably makes that big of a difference. And like I said, just DeGrom's just a slightly better pitcher.
Yeah, it's certainly close. I mean, you also don't mind that Adelman's pitching for Cincinnati, who's just not a real pitcher, and Leake is pitching for St. Louis, who is a real pitcher. So that's obviously going to influence the chance that a guy has to win the game. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a very, very close spot, and given the big savings, I just think you go err on the cheaper side. I think the park makes a difference, but I think park factors outside of Coors tend to be overrated on some level. I mean, it just depends on who the opponent is as well. There's always a lot of contextual factors there, but I think when you're talking about the top tier ace level of pitcher, I'm focusing mostly on the hitters that are going to hit against them, and that's kind of where it stops for me by and large.
No, so. I generally agree with you, and I think that, you know, if we were to make lineups right now and set them and lock them, I would take Greinke. I guess maybe I see this a little closer than you see it, but I'm going to err on the side of just taking the savings, and I'm kind of with you there. After him, you almost definitely will not and cannot roster the two of them on DraftKings. I'm not sure it's totally correct. I mean, maybe you could. It's not like a crazy outlay of salary, 21-4 altogether. Oh, no, excuse me, I was looking at FanDuel pricing. They're too expensive to roster together on DraftKings. Draft starting pitcher two, we have a couple of guys here that sort of fall in the decent to not great category and decent in like okay matchups. Any of the names below them kind of stick out to you?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going onto the night slate, you're going to be kissing a few frogs here. I mean, I'd still like to think deep down you can roster either Greinke or DeGrom. I know right now it's not showing up that way, but I'm just hoping we get some cheaper guys that we can plug and play. Because right now it's just a sea of mid-range guys, like Alex Avila is the cheapest guy in the lineup at 3,500. I do suspect that will change as the lineups decide to come out. But yeah, for right now, it's thinking about Gerrit Cole and Kenta Maeda. I guess I'll start with Maeda just because he's kind of a more straightforward one in my mind. And Maeda's a guy who, if we knew he was going to throw 100 to 110 pitches, we would roster him instantly. But given that it's the Dodgers and for whatever reason they like to preserve even their 30-year-old pitchers, it becomes a lot more difficult. So
he only threw 86 pitches in his last outing and like 71 before that. I just don't think you can count on him for more than 90 pitches. That's a huge.
I want to, Doug.
I know you do. And I want to with all these Dodger pitchers, and they just simply don't do it. Like, we have enough of a sample size on what the Dodgers' plan is with their arms outside of Kershaw that you just can't trust any of them for more than 90 pitches, really. I mean, I haven't looked at Rich Hill's pitch count, but, Alex Wood, Maeda, yeah, these guys just don't pitch far enough in the games. And I get that Maeda's 7,800, and I think he's the biggest money line favorite on the slate at minus 171. But, man, if you just only know he's going to throw 85 to 90 pitches. And by the way, that 86 feels like the top. Like, you can run bad in, like, where he comes up in the lineup. You can run bad, like, in sort of, like, how long he goes with a batter. Like, not be able to close that.
Well, it's like when you normalize the number of pitches around 85 instead of 100. Just, like, because a pitcher who normally throws 100 will occasionally throw 111 and occasionally throw 85, right? But when you start at the 85 baseline, except for the Dodgers don't ever let you tap into the upside, then all of a sudden you just have like downside of 68 pitches, and now you're really in trouble.
Right, and I think that's the biggest problem with them. And it's just the 7,800 price tag on DraftKings is just not cheap enough, I don't think, for the risk. That's just kind of where I'm landing right now. Now, I mean, I know he's showing up in a lot of lineups right now. I would suspect that as we just, I don't know, triple check like his innings pitched, his innings pitch projection, and then just with some other, hopefully some cheaper bats, I suspect that Maeda is not there when it's all said and done. Cole is an interesting one, though. He's slightly more expensive at 8,900, so 1,100 more than Maeda. He's a guy, he's been a tough one to figure out, right? Like, he's at times been a prospect and kind of a real pitcher, and then other times been unable to strike guys out. And I don't know, he's kind of bounced back a little bit in the short term here, for I believe. But do you see him as like a safer, lower middle, or kind of like middle-ish tier starting pitcher too, considering the matchup?
Yeah, Cole's a tough one to figure out because, you know, he was just rounding into form through that 2015 season, struggled with injuries last year, and struggled with performance too, frankly. And this season has been more of the same. You know, he actually ran hot last year with a 3.88 ERA. This season, he has three fewer innings, an identical strikeout total. So I think you can pretty safely say that the guy who was a strikeout per inning guy in 2015 is just gone right now. Like, he's just not quite there. Sure, mid eights, K per nine is not terrible or anything, but whenever you're starting to give up those little edges, it could become a problem. And then the walks are dramatically up. Like, you know, he had 44 walks in 208 innings in 2015 and 27 this year in 113 innings. So you start to add up these little micro edges, and Cole is not quite the same guy. But like we talked about on the early slate, you know, it all comes down to who you're comparing him against. And right now, him facing the Brewers, a pretty reasonable spot, given that there's no real ace arms on DraftKings that you probably want to pay the whole way up for. I mean, maybe you wind up going Greinke and Cole or something like that. But given that it's kind of a dicey landscape for pitching there, I could see you playing him against a Brewers team that is a top three team in terms of strikeouts against righties.
Yeah, Brewers take a big park downgrade by going to Pittsburgh, so that does hurt them there. Greinke, I mean, in his defense here, so his last three games, he does have 19 strikeouts in 17 innings. So I know that's...
You're talking about Cole or Greinke?
Oh, sorry, Cole. Did I say Greinke? Yeah, I meant Cole. Cole has been more than a strikeout per inning guy over the last three games. I know that sample size is pretty small. I guess you could even take it out to the last four games. Then you can still keep it right around a strikeout an inning, and that did include, you know, two matchups against the Cardinals and the Phillies and the Giants, not huge strikeout teams. I know that he...
Well, also included a game where he pitched five innings and got seven Ks against the Giants, but also gave up 10 hits and seven runs. So he got the...
bad luck. I actually do think that was like, yeah, it was a 500 bad. But I actually remember, because I think we might have rostered in that game, and it was a lot of singles in that game. I'm not trying to like...
That's actually not a bad call. Anytime one of our pitchers does bad, just instantly say bad luck.
Yeah, bad luck, dude.
Persuaded without even looking at it.
Yeah, it's just better to be lucky than good in DFS. What do you want me to tell you? You know, we can make every single one of our...
That's just bad luck, dude.
Yeah, every single one of our projections is absolutely correct. It's just luck. It's just the luck thing that kind of just takes it one way or the other.
Factor. How do we get luckier, then? That's the question.
No, but I do like him in the spot. Brewers will strike out a lot. We saw that against with Nova last night. You know, Nova's not much of a strikeout guy. He was able to dial up some K's more than you typically see for him, and that kind of stuff does matter. Like, when you face a team that just does strike out more than the average team, it does just, I mean, it's pretty simple math. It increases your chance to strike those guys out. I like Cole in the spot. I don't think he's too expensive. I think the Vegas is seeing this kind of the same thing. They're not expecting a ton out of the Brewers here because of the matchup in the park. So I think, you know, for a starting pitcher too, I could definitely see rostering someone like Greinke and Cole together and hoping that some cheaper bats come in along the way, which typically does happen. One other guy I wanted to get your opinion on here. The matchup is not great, but he's been kind of decent this year as Pomeranz. He faces a Toronto team that's mostly right. Oh, I think it's actually just going to be all right-handed tonight when it's all said and done. But can you see he's only the reason I'm bringing him up here is because he's only 7,200, and I think that is probably just too low for his makeup. But do you think the matchup just kind of doesn't warrant it and just kind of move on?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the upside is there. We played him against the Yankees, I believe, earlier, and he was quite good. I mean, the Blue Jays, it's kind of a next-level matchup in that they just stack right-handed bats, and things become very problematic for left-handed pitchers. But I think the K upside is enough that he can at least be on the radar. I just don't think in this late slate you're really going to land on something that amounts to total safety no matter what you do. And so at that point, I'm willing to just go straight expectation. So on a guy like Pomeranz, I guess what I'll say is that if he winds up in lineups, I won't X him out. Like, I won't say, like, kind of the way you're picturing with Maeda, thinking about all the downside risk of him simply not going out there and pitching. I think if Pomeranz is on the mound, his strikeout potential is good enough to where you should consider him. I just think that you're not going to feel great about it, right? So, yeah, I think you can play him. I think no matter where you're going to land on DraftKings, it's going to feel pretty dicey. So if you don't have an appetite for that sort of thing in your cash game purposes, tonight might be a night to take off.
Yeah, his strikeout stuff is as good as you'll ever see in this price range. So he's been striking out close to 10 per nine this year. At 7,200, at a close to 10K per nine rate is pretty good. He walks a ton of guys, so that's not great. It's really hard for him to go deep into games. The Blue Jays do have some patient hitters and some true lefty killers right at the top of the lineup. And it's gonna be tough to roll through at least the Bautista Donaldson part of the lineup, and then I mean even Russell Martin hitting there. So those guys are pretty patient hitters, don't K a ton. That is a problem. I think once you get down to the lower part of the lineup, you're a little safer on Pomeranz. It's a risky play. You're hoping that he can just kind of mitigate the walks for a game. It doesn't really totally feel like the Blue Jays are the team that you want to end up trying to target him to do that against, but the price is at 7,200. That is a pretty darn low price for a guy who strikes out as many guys as Pomeranz. All right, let's finish it off with some stacks. In our system really kind of honing in on two teams. I'm wondering if you're seeing it kind of the same way, just from a bird's eye view. Who do you like kind of stacking who do you like stacking in this later slate?
Yeah, I mean, anytime I see Martin Perez's name come up, my eyebrows raise in excitement, because Perez has just been terrible. I mean, the last year he was truly abysmal with a 4.6 K per nine and a 3.4 walk per nine. But this season, the 6 Ks per nine and 3.5 walks per nine really aren't that much dramatically better. He's actually even been giving up more fly balls, which has had his home run rate tick up. And Baltimore, you know, stacks the lineup with right-handed hitters. Now, some of those are kind of platoon neutral guys or even reverse platoon split guys, but they have a considerable amount of power that goes up and down that lineup. And then, you know, a number of guys who they can just plug and play as kind of lefty killers too, like Jonathan Schoop, who should bat fairly high at a reasonable salary tonight. So I think you can start targeting Baltimore early. I think you can get those guys relatively cheaply, and I think there's huge upside.
No, I think that they're probably going to be, I would suspect, the chalk stack here just because of the matchup, the top of that order, that Jones, Machado, Scope kind of thing, even Trumbo. Really, all of them are coming cheap. Even Wellington Castillo has been a lefty. That's been the much better side of his platoon for his career, mostly when he was playing with Arizona. But he's hitting a little low in the lineup at seventh. Sometimes you can see Ricard kind of jump up to the leadoff spot against lefties. I'm not sure that's going to be the case here. They do seem to have settled on the top of that lineup with the guys I mentioned before. That's been a pretty consistent run for them. So I'm not sure Ricard jumps up to the top again, but if he were, he would be a great bat there. One thing I'm actually interested to see is, you know, so the Diamondbacks last night traded for JD Martinez. Actually, it kind of seems like they just kind of got him for nothing, but I'm not sure. I suspect their lineup stays the same. That lineup, though, adding Martinez in, he's going to end up playing for, like, Chris Herman. He'll take his spot in the lineup, I would suppose. It seems like a massive upgrade. How much of an upgrade?
Oh, yeah.
So now you're going to go, presumably you're going to go Pollock, Peralta, Goldschmidt, Lamb, JD Martinez. That's a pretty damn good 1-5. Do you see them, like, how much do you see the JD Martinez trade improving the Diamondbacks and just kind of making everyone better just from, like, a fantasy run scoring perspective?
Yeah, that's a good question, and you phrased it appropriately, which is to say, you know, people tend to overrate things like protection, whatnot. when it comes to like, ooh, now with J.D. Martinez behind him, he's going to get a lot more good pitches. Like, it doesn't tend to work out that well for people. But for fantasy purposes, it really matters. I mean, getting a guy in there with 1,000 OPS this season is going to make a big difference, you know, especially if it's an upgrade over a guy like Chris Herman. Now, Martinez, as I'm sure a lot of the more sophisticated DFS fans know, is a lefty killer. Like, that's his primary role. He's got a 1,600 OPS against left-handed pitching this season. So truly off the charts. He's been merely good against right-handed pitching this season, and he's kind of struggled with even being just medium against right-handed pitching in the past, but I think it's a dramatic enough upgrade for them that it's certainly worth consideration. Now, I don't know, and actually, I'd really like Martinez once he starts to hit in Arizona a little bit more. I think his price has room to climb, given that it's such a dramatic park upgrade, so I think his kind of baseline will settle at a higher level. And to your point, at Cincinnati, also a much better place to hit as well. So yeah, I think Arizona is a much better lineup overall. And certainly Tim Adelman is not a guy that I would ever shy away from stacking against. So yeah, all in all, it looks like a good spot.
Yeah, conversely, it makes the Tigers worse, right? So they go from J.D. Martinez to basically like Mike Matuk or like whoever they're going to, that's who they slid in last night. I don't know if that's their plan to do like in the long term. They've kind of jostled around some of those outfielder spots. But it does seem like those are two teams just kind of headed in the wrong, they're headed in, obviously, in just completely different directions, because now you just take, yeah, you take out J.D. Martinez from, like, the fifth spot and just, like, put Matuk in, like, the seventh spot or wherever he ends up, and all of a sudden that team is worse. I think that I'm going to be looking pretty strongly here at the Diamondbacks. I love the park. I do like the matchup. I do think that Martinez upgrade is just going to, like I said, just kind of push all those numbers, those runs, RBIs, chances. I'm not a big protection guy either, but you just get a better hitter and you just have a better chance to just get scored or just get driven across the plate. I think I'd be probably going something like Baltimore Diamondbacks, maybe Baltimore and the Dodgers against Carlos Rodon. Though I do sometimes get a little worried about pitchers that can strike guys out. Rodon does have some of that in his makeup. Anything else I'm missing here before we get out of here?
No, actually, well, I think there are a couple teams that I think you can target maybe a little bit more. I actually think even the Tigers with the downgrade are still in a pretty good spot against Jason Hamill. I think Alex Avila is a one-off, especially on FanDuel at the $2,600 price tag. It's simply incorrect. He might touch 100% ownership there. He's been a guy who's very, very heavily owned in the past, especially if he winds up batting second like he has against righties in many cases. Hamill, not totally a real pitcher, you know, gives up a ton of fly balls, gives up a lot of really hard hit balls. Unlike a guy like Straley, he's never been able to turn the high fly ball rate into a low BABIP. So, you know, he's giving up hits for power and just hits in general. K rate's at an all-time low and the walk rate's at an all-time high. So you don't really like to see that combination either. So I really, really like them. I actually really like stacking against Rodon as well, simply because the K stuff is there. He has insane blow-up potential. This season, he's allowed 6.5 walks per nine. And while that's kind of out of bounds based on his historical expectation, he's just really struggled recently. So, I like that stack as well.
Now, there's a lot of interesting ways to go here on the evening slate, just mostly because after you get outside of a couple of the top pitchers we talked about, there are some pretty bad arms going. A lot of different ways to stack. All right, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back again on Friday talking more baseball. DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. It's powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, it was good to be back talking baseball.
Hey, great to be back.
Sorry, I used the wrong adjective to describe it. It is great to be back. We will be back again Friday. Enjoy baseball today and tomorrow, everyone, and we'll talk to you then.